Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy. And we are joined again by our daughter.
Hey.
That's Haley.
That's me.
Something stinks at the Ugly Tuna Saluna. And I'm going to tell you why.
What is this, like a episode of SpongeBob?
It sounds like it. But some of the cases that we cover are recommendations, of course, but some are just living in my head rent-free. And this is one of those cases. Something I've heard about or read about over the years, and it just sticks with me. We're talking about 27-year-old Brian Schaefer, who was a medical student at Ohio State University College of Medicine in Columbus. He was a smarty. He received his degree in microbiology in 2003 and went into medical school in 2004. He was the oldest of two boys, and he was actually really good at tennis growing up, so everyone thought that he would go at least semi-pro, but he had inspiration in the medical field. That inspiration was his mom, Renee. She was a nurse, and they were really close. But they got even closer when she was battling a rare form of bone cancer while Brian was in college.
He liked most tropical places. Mm-hmm. He would post on his MySpace that he wanted to move somewhere sunny and basically be a beach bum living a Jimmy Buffett lifestyle.
That was his goals.
In fact, in his description on MySpace, he put that the whole doctor thing was just a job. Temporary. He wanted to own an island and start a band. So for Christmas in 2005, his mom gave him a trip to Miami, Florida. A little getaway to the beach that he could take for like spring break after testing. Mm-hmm. He was dating a fellow med student at the time, Alexis, and she was very okay with the trip that they were planning. In fact, a lot of their close friends thought that Brian might be proposing to Alexis on this trip. His mom would pass away, sadly, on March 6th, 2006, and Brian had a hard time with that. But his friends say that he was still good old Brian. He was sad, but still able to maintain a happy demeanor for the most part. He posted on his MySpace, "My mom was the greatest, most wonderful person in the world."
Yeah, they were very close. And just over 3 weeks later, Brian finished up his tests and had dinner with his dad, Randy, the Friday before spring break. So that puts us at March 31st. He was exhausted from pulling all-nighters, cramming for the test, but was relieved that they were over, and he was ready to blow off some steam. Randy suggested that he go home and get some much-needed rest after dinner, but he went back to his apartment where he met up with his friend William, who everyone calls Clint, and the two went to do some bar hopping. Brian's brother Derek and his girlfriend were supposed to meet them at the bar that night, but they ended up canceling and just going home. At around 9:30, the two guys go to the Ugly Tuna Saluna in the South Campus Gateway Complex on High Street. At this time, Alexis was on her way to Toledo to visit with her family for the weekend since her and Brian had a flight on Monday to head to Miami.
Brian called her around 10 p.m. to just tell her that he loved her and then talk about the plans for Monday.
Then Brian and Clint made their way down to the Arena District. They would stop at a bar, each having a shot and checking out the scene, then would be off to the next. After midnight, their friend Meredith met them at the Short North and gave them a ride back to the Ugly Tuna Saluna to end their night there. The Ugly Tuna Saluna, as mentioned, is in a complex. Part of it was still being built, so there was construction on the backside, but the front part of the building had several businesses and some were still open. The bar was on the second floor, so you have to take an escalator up to the entrance. Brian, Meredith, and Clint are all on surveillance going up the escalator. After a while inside the bar, Clint and Meredith are having a conversation and then realize that they can't see Brian. Closing time was coming up and they checked all inside the bar. Nothing. Everyone piles out of the bar and down the escalator, but they can't find him there either. So they start calling his phone at 2:01 a.m., but there is no answer.
Yeah, they assumed that he had done the good old Irish goodbye and just left without saying anything and walked back to his apartment since it was just six blocks away. And Brian had even left his car at the apartment, so he would have definitely been on foot. Clint and Meredith decide to just leave. Now, we just had a family outing doing a bike bar thing where you all have your own pedals and seats on this little contraption, and your pedaling is what makes this big trolley bike thing go while a dude steers you around, and you just go to different bars and day drink. And every time we went into a bar and got back on that bike, we all did a head count.
Yeah, you come with me, you leave with me, no man left behind.
Yeah, I guess we're just different, though. Because if you go to the bar with somebody and then they're just gone, you just go home?
I guess they just do things different at the Tuna Saluna.
Right.
The ugly Tuna Saluna.
Don't forget
Saluna.
That it's ugly. It's the not ugly, cute.
The ugly Tuna Saluna.
Now, Alexis, his girlfriend, and Randy, his dad, tried calling Brian for the rest of the weekend, but the calls were going straight to voicemail. And they were worried. But it got worse when Brian didn't make the flight on Monday morning for Miami. So he was reported missing to the Columbus police. His phone was not enabled with GPS at this time, so they weren't able to track his phone. And if it rings, it pings. But remember, it is going straight to voicemail, so no ring, no ping. Since the South Campus gateway was heavy with crime, there was a lot of surveillance cameras, though. And that's how we know that Brian, Clint, and Meredith went up the escalators of the Ugly Tuna Saluna at about 1:15 a.m.
At 1:55 a.m., Brian is seen on camera talking to two women outside of the entrance of the bar before he walks off of camera.
Which bar was it?
At 1:55 a.m., Brian is seen on camera talking to two women outside the Ugly Tuna Saluna before he walks off camera.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The women said that he was going to walk them to their car in the Wendy's parking lot, which was about a block away, but at the last minute changed his mind. They leave at 1:58 a.m. Meredith calls his phone just 3 minutes later at 2:01 a.m. So he disappeared in 3 minutes.
So is that a block away from the Ugly Tuna Saluna?
Yes.
Okay. They counted the people coming into the bar and people leaving the bar, and there is one less person leaving that entered.
Yeah. So they count how many people come in, they count how many people come out.
At the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
We just have to keep saying
exactly at the Ugly Tuna Saluna.
It's my favorite thing right now, and I'm not letting you take it away from me.
Okay,
so.
Fine. They were making fun of me a minute ago because it's, you know, mentioned so many times, but it's because the name is funny, okay?
The name
is just
great.
Funny.
I'm just waiting for SpongeBob to come out.
There's no SpongeBobs. Mm-hmm. They're not way. Under the sea.
Like, this drinks is for everybody.
This is land. We're on land. Not under the
that
sea.
That could totally be a bar.
Where?
Bikini Bottom.
Bikini Atoll. That's where it's based on. Boom.
Yep.
Knowledge drop. You didn't expect that.
Y'all got too much information on SpongeBob. Y'all got background checks on everybody. It's just too much. So they have four, and I'm talking the police, have four scenarios at this point. Number one, that the camera just missed him somehow, like he was directly behind someone and was blocked from view. But the camera was pointed directly at the escalator, so unless he went side by side all the way down that escalator, that's not likely. And that camera was a fixed camera. Then they had a camera that could be fixed or manual, and we'll talk about that one in a minute. Scenario two, he changed his clothes inside or put on a hat to cover the camera's view of his face. Also considered less likely, since where would he get those clothes? He didn't have a backpack or anything, not even a jacket. So he was literally in the clothes he was wearing and had nowhere to keep a change of clothes, unless he switched with someone in those 3 minutes in the bar. So again, less likely to have happened. Scenario three, he left through another exit. There was one other exit that was next to the bar entrance down a little hall, but that was really a service elevator that went down to an exit at the back of the building where all of that construction was. And this is where the one other camera was pointing at, right? At the time that Brian would have walked down that hall. It was later found out that security at the bar switched it from fixed mode to manual mode and changed the direction the camera was pointing. So you can't actually see if he went that way or not. Investigators said that the construction site was a rough area where they were building like a grocery store or something. So it had an elevator shaft, but no elevator in it. And there was plywood put up with chains on them to keep them together and keep people out of the site. And there was a small hole dug, but it was very shallow. Plus, he was not seen on any of the surrounding businesses' surveillance cameras walking away from the building. Scenario four, He just never left the building, period. They canvassed the area on foot with bikes. They have dive teams checking the river that was adjacent to the OSU campus, and they brought in cadaver dogs. The cadaver dogs followed his scent to the Wendy's parking lot and then lost it. Unfortunately, the surveillance camera outside of the Wendy's wasn't working. They checked in dumpsters, but one had been dumped prior to them being able to check it, and the trash from that dumpster was taken to a landfill in Tennessee. The dogs did check the construction site, as there was speculation he was buried there, so the building would have covered up the body, but the dogs didn't hit on Brian's scent being anywhere near that site.
The detectives did say that they checked the building top to bottom, every crevice, that they even had maintenance remove fixed panels that covered electrical and plumbing just to make sure that he didn't get stuck somewhere.
Yeah, like maybe he had somehow made his way into a wall or behind something and was trying to find a way out and got caught. They checked all over that building, according to the cops.
They did mention that he possibly could have taken the service elevator to another business and left out of one of their exits. But again, he was not seen leaving the building on any of the surveillance cameras they had. On the same note, the Wendy's camera wasn't working, so there would be a gap in what they could see, really. They put up flyers with his description, including his Pearl Jam tattoo on his arm, which is the stick figure from the Alive album cover. They even searched the sewer system, hospitals, homeless shelters, everywhere.
Everywhere. And his car was still in the parking lot of his apartment building. His bed hadn't been slept in. There was no activity on his credit cards, bank accounts, social security number, or of course his cell phone. They did pull his data from his cell phone company, and the last signal showed at 2:10 a.m. when Clint texted him trying to find him. Everyone who had seen or spoken to him that night was questioned, and they all gave their accounts of the night. Then everyone took a polygraph test, except for Clint. He got a lawyer and refused a polygraph, saying he had already told them repeatedly what had happened that night. And some people find this odd, but I've seen enough cases where they pin stuff on innocent people, and the way they do the questions to try to trip you up can end up in you getting convicted for a crime you didn't even commit. So I will quickly move on from that. I will say that the two women that he was last seen talking to reported that they were not asked to take a polygraph, so I do think that's weird. And some people have really looked into the surveillance footage that night and brought up something. I don't know how much stock to put into it personally, but you can be your own judge. Just before he left the two women that night, you can see him look at the security guards, pull something from his pocket, which looks like maybe his cell phone. He checks it like he's looking for time or missed calls or whatever he's doing. Then it appears that he reaches towards one of the women. Now she has her purse hanging from her arm, and many believe that he put whatever he had in his hand into her purse. So whether it was his phone or drugs or anything like that, something he should not have had on him, or if it was even anything at all, we don't know. The angle of the camera is obstructed by the woman, so he could have just checked his phone, saw what time it was, put it back in his pocket. You can't tell. But I would think that if he had put something in her purse, she would have seen it eventually. Since this is right before the two split ways, or I guess it'd be the three, it may have just been him nudging her to get her attention to tell them that he wouldn't be walking them to their car. And I'll post a picture of the sequence so you can judge for yourself.
Meredith has came out to the public with her events of the night, and they are what we have told you here, but also that her and Clint left the bar together and were together until around 10 a.m. Saturday.
Yeah.
It became a part of Alexis's daily routine to call Brian's phone at least once. And in September, 5 months after Brian went missing on April Fool's Day, his phone rang three times, then went to voicemail. This is the first time it had rang this whole time. It was looked into by the police, and they said that it bounced off a tower in Hilliard, which is 14 miles away. Singular Wireless said that this was a glitch, though. They said that companies send out signals to phones at regular intervals to keep up to date with emails, texts, data, etc. Likely what happened was that since this was during a particularly busy time, the signal sent out by the company's system likely was rerouted to the next tower, causing a delay, which caused the phone to ring while the signal was making its way to the tower in Hilliard.
Yeah, that's a legit. I mean, the cops don't really know if they buy that or not.
I was about to say, that's like the worst April Fool's joke ever.
Well, he went missing on April Fool's Day.
Oh, that makes much more sense. Yeah. I was like,
this
man.
This was in September.
I thought the same thing.
No, this was in September, so it was 5 months later.
Makes sense.
And then all of a sudden it rings, and everybody's like, whoa, it's on. Mm-hmm. But the company is saying, no, it was not on. It was just a delay in us being able to reach the last tower that he was pinged at.
So who kept paying the phone bill?
His dad. So his dad cut off the credit cards and stuff so that in case somebody had robbed him or something and mm-hmm. stolen his wallet, they wouldn't be able to use it. But they kept on things like his phone and stuff like sense. That okay. to be able to okay. monitor.
That is still, I kind of agree with the cops on that one. That mm-hmm. is a little weird. I would be looking into that.
There's more.
Oh.
Okay.
Now, in Cincinnati, later that year, Eddie Vedder stopped between songs at a concert to ask for tips on Brian's disappearance. Now, in case you don't know who Eddie Vedder is, I'm sorry for you, but he is the lead singer of Pearl Jam. Remember, Brian had that Pearl Jam tattoo on his arm, so he was a big fan. And we actually have that audio that we're going to play for you right here. So that was pretty cool.
That was really cool.
Yeah. And Brian and Alexis had actually already bought tickets to that concert, but Alexis couldn't bring herself to go without him. So she had sold the tickets on eBay and put the money towards the reward fund. And that fund was at $100,000 the last I checked. Police were following up on leads from all over the place. Michigan, Texas, even Sweden. Randy even got information from a psychic that said that Brian's body was in water near a bridge pier. So Brian's younger brother, Derek, Randy, and some other volunteers got out the waders and spent a lot of time in the river searching. There were theories that maybe he was the victim of the smiley face killer since he fit the criteria, but there was no smiley face in the area, and Brian would be the only victim of that killer that was never found. His apartment was broken into, but the only thing taken was a DVD player and some movies. Police think it was likely just someone who had seen all the news coverage and knew that the apartment was empty, so it was an easy score.
Unfortunately, tragedy would strike again in September 2008 when Randy was clearing debris from his yard when a tree limb broke off of a tree, hitting him and killing him. Damn.
Yeah. Damn.
Damn.
He was found by his neighbors the next morning. They posted his obituary, and there was a place to leave condolences. One message said, "To Dad, love Brian," and was from the Virgin Islands. Since it's a U.S. territory, you wouldn't need a passport to go there, and it is tropical, so many believe that Brian actually did just run away from his life and start a new one. But the police tracked it to a public computer in the area, so they believe it was just a hoax.
Assholes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking maybe he just, with his mom dying and all mm-hmm. that stuff, I figured he just changed his clothes,
mm-hmm.
ducked out the back, and then just kind of...
And he's very smart. You have to think about that. And there was less coverage back then.
I mean, that's what I was thinking. I mean, I hope.
Yeah.
That's at least what he...
But where would he get the clothes?
He could have stashed in there beforehand.
That could have been him handing something to the two women for exchange. I
mean, it's the freaking ugly Tunis Luna. I'm sure they don't have solid ceilings. I'm sure it's a drop ceiling. That means store stuff up above the ceiling.
Listen, I'm with you because that's one of the main theories is that he just disappeared. And mm-hmm. people's like, oh, but he didn't use his credit cards. But if you're planning it, you would do things like that. Hide your clothes. Keep your cash. Like, stock it back. And then just take off. And like we said, Virgin Islands is a tropical place that you don't need a passport to get to. Yep.
But it's in his MySpace that he wanted to go live somewhere tropical. He wanted to be on an island and have his own band and stuff. And well, so somebody could have easily just taken that information.
Oh, that's what they did. Well, and yeah, put it into that.
No,
yeah.
I'm just saying, I was like, you know, I'd like to think that's probably what he did, you know, just got away.
That'd be nice.
But it'd be kind of shitty if he did it and didn't call his dad at least say, hey, I'm okay.
I do also want to mention that now his dad is dead. So now his brother is by himself. Mom's dead. Dad's dead. Yeah. Brother's gone. Now you got Derek by himself. Why would he not at least tell his brother, hey, here's where I'm at.
True.
That's very true.
And that's what got me. So I was kind of on the same train of he just ran off. He just got sick of shit and just took off. But everybody says he's such a nice guy. I don't see him leaving his brother just kind of hanging without.
That's true.
Because his brother is still looking for him, and he probably wouldn't be if he'd be more laid back about it if he knew where he was. I would think.
Unless maybe, never mind. I need to stop hypothesizing.
Where does he vacation? Let's look up Derek's records.
Yeah, Derek.
Does he always go to the Virgin Islands to take a vacation? I'm just wondering.
Right.
Now, Clint in all this time is catching a lot of heat from people for being so quiet and not taking a polygraph. Derek and Randy had a private investigator that was helping them with the investigation, and he received a letter from Clint's lawyer saying, if Brian is alive, which is what I'm led to believe after speaking with the detective involved, then it is Brian and not Clint who is causing his family pain and hardship. Brian should come forward and end this. Derek said that as soon as the detective started getting involved, that's when Clint pretty much had no contact with anybody. He said, I've always thought he definitely knows something, just won't come forward with it. If Brian did take off somewhere, if that is the case, we just always had a strong feeling that Clint would possibly know that. Alexis also believes that Clint is keeping something from them, but she believes that Brian is dead and he did not run off.
In 2019, a picture went viral of a homeless man in Tijuana because they say it looked like he could be Brian. FBI facial recognition software determined that it was not.
Yeah.
I ain't count, you know, they still think Tupac's alive too.
Who said he's not?
Boom.
Well, then they need to get the FBI facial recognition.
Find Tupac.
And prove him wrong.
Find my man Pac.
Mm-hmm. No, they actually showed that video of supposedly Pac rapping in the Caribbean.
Yes, I saw that.
AI is too rampant for me to.
I concur.
Yeah, like agree or deny and everything.
Okay.
Supposedly.
Okay, that would change his appearance a lot, I think, because everybody's so used to seeing him bald.
Mm-hmm. All he'd have to do is take that nose ring out.
I'm sure that was not a long time ago.
Done. Grow them dreads, take the nose ring out, and mm-hmm. you're just a regular dude.
Anyway, back on topic.
Oh. When Brian disappeared, state law was that individual departments got to decide how they handled cases like this. But Randy had joined families of other missing adults in Ohio, and they were able to get a new law passed setting a statewide protocol before he died. I also want to mention that there is an in-depth, multi-part YouTube out there that not a lot of people have seen. It doesn't have near as many views as I think it should, where the host of this channel actually interviewed former Sergeant John Hurst, who was the lead investigator on this case. And I think it's important because he not only gives some insight to the case, I think he tells more than he was supposed to, since, you know, they like to keep things to themselves so that when someone does provide them information that was not made public, they know they have someone of interest.
He said that there was no engagement ring or proof of any kind that he was planning on proposing to Alexis on that Miami trip. He said that Brian and Randy had a somewhat strained relationship. that Brian was closer to his mom, and his mom was his main financial supporter for bills, tuition, and the majority of his expenses. While they don't know exactly what he and Randy had talked about at dinner that night, there has been a lot of reports of Randy cutting Brian off financially. This is what they were being told in the interviews with people after the disappearance. But he said that was speculation, of course.
He did come to confirm that they had a disagreement over Renee's life insurance money.
Yeah, so at that dinner, Randy had told them that they had a conversation about Renee's life insurance and the amount.
So, I mean, was Renee and Randy, was they like divorced or separated?
No, they were married, but I don't think Randy was fully aware of how much money Renee was providing to Brian to live.
Oh.
And so once she died, that kind of caused a thing because Brian's like, hey, I need this paid. I need this paid. And Randy was like, no, you're grown. You're 27. Buy your own stuff.
Oh.
And so there's a lot of reports that they had a strained relationship and hadn't talked for quite some time before they even went to dinner that night. And that was kind of a makeup dinner.
Okay.
Yeah. He said that Clint was summoned to a grand jury and showed up with his lawyer, who went to the prosecution and said that Clint would not be providing testimony there that day. And then they left. And that was that. Meredith did tell them that Brian and Clint had an argument at the bar on St. Patrick's Day and had an argument at the Ugly Tuna Saloon that night. But while you could tell it was an argument, it was so loud in there that you couldn't hear what it was about. Another thing that a lot of these reports don't mention, but Sergeant Hurst did, was that Brian's phone was pinged at different locations for a few days after he disappeared. They say that his phone went dead at 4 a.m. on April 1st, and the singular place said that it was one of those ghost pings that they were getting in these days, but the cops weren't quite buying that. So it was like pinged on this road, and then a couple days later it would ping on this road, or a couple hours later.
Whatever. How many of these little like ghost pings do they do? Because that's weird.
I only saw two to three places that they reported it pinged other than when it pinged in September.
Okay.
So right after he disappeared, there was two or three places that it pinged within days. So there was a robbery kind of scenario that they were playing with, that he had just gotten robbed and something happened to him, but the person that had his phone kept trying to turn it on or whatever, or charge it, and then they were being able to get these pings. But then the cell phone company's like, oh no, that's our random ghost pings just trying to find the phone. And that's all they had on the case. Alexis is now an OBGYN. She's married and has two boys of her own. And she still talks about Brian whenever she gets the chance, and will until this case is solved. The Ugly Tuna Saluna did shut down in 2018.
No,
but hold up. They did open the Ugly Tuna Saluna 2
oh,
a
2.
Few
0.
Streets over. Yeah.
That's what they need to do. Make the name longer.
2.0.
Just add to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of different theories on this case. We've touched on several. There's Clint helped him run away. That Clint had something to do with his death. And that he was in one of those dumpsters that they didn't check. And one I thought of all along, like the still alive theory that I didn't hear anybody else talk about, was because his mom was so financially supportive of him that she only did that if he went into medicine. Like it was kind of an ultimatum. Because remember, he was playing tennis. He wanted to be a beach bum. He didn't want to do all this. And so one of my thoughts was maybe Renee told him, if you go into medicine, I'll pay your tuition. And then so he goes into medicine, but it's hard. So he's struggling. And then she passes away. So that's hard. And he's struggling even more. And then Randy cuts him off. So then you're just adding on top of all these things. And that he did just leave. Broken Ohio versus broke on a beach is not too hard of a decision.
Very true. But everyone says he was a decent guy, so I don't know that he would leave Derek all alone without at least, like, reaching out to say he was okay.
Right.
Also, maybe because he and Clint got into it again, he did, you know, the whole Irish goodbye, out a different exit, turned his phone off, you know, just to avoid him.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe something happened.
True.
Maybe he did make it over to the Wendy's parking lot where the women from the bar had parked, and maybe he caught a ride with them, and then something happened.
Also
there's
true.
Just a lot that goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
They have been cooperative, but we have seen guilty people insert themselves right in the middle, you know, right in the middle of an investigation before, you know. Mm-hmm. So this isn't too far-fetched either. We just don't know.
Yeah, because that's another theory, is that he did in fact decide, hey, I'm not going to go back with Clinton Meredith. I'm just going to catch a ride with these people since I know them.
Mm-hmm.
And then something happened. Maybe jealous boyfriend. Maybe they got robbed in the Wendy's parking lot. Maybe, I mean, you never know.
A few years ago, mm-hmm. I told you, we had those people who hung out with our roommate,
mm-hmm.
made friends with them, came in and started that fight in our living room because the angry boyfriend had decided, yeah, let's go hang out with him just so I can rough him up in his house.
And it could have went way sideways.
It's always the people who are like, yeah, come to... That is not funny.
That was so funny because he's just like, dude, calm down.
I'm going to say this right now. If you look at the Snapchat videos, you could tell homie was there to fight.
Aw. Well, you didn't take none of that shit. You drug one of them out all by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And this story gets mistaken for another similar story, the story of Kyle Fleischman. That he was 24 years old. He was also the oldest child. He was also close to his mom. His mom was also battling cancer. And he was last seen by friends in a bar. But that's pretty much where the similarities in these two cases end. And they've pretty much been able to deduce what happened to Kyle because he is seen on surveillance after leaving the bar. And we can do a story on him if you guys want. Just let us know. But for now, this is all that we have on Brian. There has been no progress in the case for some time now. And I think this might be one that stays cold until someone comes forward. It only takes one.
It only takes one. And if you have any information on Brian Schaefer or his disappearance, even if you don't think it affects the case, speak up. You never know what the investigators have pieced together, and your information might be the glue that they need to make it stick. Please call the Columbus Police Detective and Andre Edwards at 614-645-4624 or FBI's VICAP at 800-634-4097.
All right, well, that's it. We appreciate it. Catch us on the next one.
Bye.
Bye.